This week on RSBNB Update, despite a late game update, we have patch notes on the first time user experience, big game hunter dinosaurs being fixed, and more. Also, a live stream showing more archaeology gameplay, and Mod Warden stops by the stream for an unexpected chat highlighting the roadmap and more. This is RSBNB Update, episode 769, recorded Thursday, March 19th, 2020. Look who stopped by. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. Tannis and myself are back again this week, just the both of us here for this episode. We have had a couple people on earlier in the month, but, you know, it's time to sit back and get ready for that launch that's coming in under 2 weeks now.
It's coming.
And, you know, they mentioned in the live stream this week that, yes, we still do intend to deliver archaeology on the 30th. We will let you guys know if there's any changes to that. And, of course, this is due to the global pandemic. This week's update was pushed back to a Wednesday, in fact, because of this. But there was a live stream as well this week. So all in all, Jagex has proven that their work-from-home capabilities are set. And with that, they actually launched an update remotely, believe it or not. Two updates this week. They rebooted the game server twice this week with no problems and launched an update with the majority of the studio working from home, which, I mean...
Now, Shane, do you mean to tell me that grown adults were responsible enough to carry out their work as they were supposed to do and two updates shipped and everything worked?
Yeah. Yeah.
And all that without the bosses watching them?
Yeah. What happened is they did a dummy update on Monday to effectively, you know, see if they could shut the servers down and deploy something to it remotely and bring the servers back up, and that worked fine, and that paved the way Wednesday for the actual update that we saw this week. So, pretty neat. Pretty neat, I must say. But if you're wanting to follow along with us, we do have full show notes available at update.rsbnb.com. I am Shane12088, and he is Tannis79, and we're gonna jump right in here. And you know, some of the news we got this week is that Yak Track is coming back on Monday, March 23rd. And based on the title of this news post, "The Secrets in the Stars," you can definitely tell that this one is going to be a little bit archaeology themed. So that's going to be so fun. I've been waiting for this to come back. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I mean, now that I actually did the premium stuff, I get the Yak Track, so I'm going to be... Well, I mean, you know, I get the premium Yak Track or whatever. So.
Yeah.
And it's nice that is starting, because we kind of needed something to start doing, and that can take a while, so that with the new skill, yeah. I think that's kind of the right time.
Because, you know, I've just been gathering divine charges because those things shot up, you know? This runs from March 23rd to May 3rd, and, you know, I just have to say, and, you know, granted, we haven't seen what the rewards are for this yet, but this is the whole reason that I bought Premier Club this year. Yak Track, and just the amount of diversification that it brought to my gameplay with that one they ran last year. So I'm so pleased that this is here as an option for us yet again until May 3rd. So, you know, it's what, 6 weeks, I guess, based on the time. Yeah, 6 weeks. So lots of time to, you know, do archaeology and then work Yak Track in with it as well. So this is definitely going to be one of the huge hallmark releases of the year, seeing how this ties into archaeology and what some of the other rewards are to it. And, you know, this was actually telegraphed a bit to us before we got the news post on it, because earlier in the week they actually shipped out a newsletter. If you're subscribed to the newsletters, you would have got it, and you would have seen that Yak Track was coming back on the 23rd. And also in that newsletter, they mentioned that there's going to be a whole new archaeology soundtrack on the way, coming with the launch of a skill, which is something as well. But also alongside this, they did bring out some concept artwork for the Sagittarius armor that comes out inside the new Yak Track promotion, as well as the I can't read what this one's called. Zodiac armor, or sorry, Gemini armor. And you know, these look really amazing just with how these are all set up in terms of their looks. And this is, I think, peak RuneScape 3 fashionscape here. And, you know, everybody always says, hey, you know, you got all these little things here and there. We always look at games like Overwatch and whatnot for how they do cosmetics, but all of these things, you know, just push that envelope of what cosmetics are in RS3 and expand on them. And they just look really, really great from this concept art. So I can't wait for this to begin.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the to trying to get the Gemini set. That's the one really got an eye on.
Yeah. All right. Should we go through some patch notes for the week?
Yeah.
All right.
Let's patch it up, Shane.
So, you know, many people were wondering what we'd exactly see with this first work from home update, but it's a patch week and there's lots of new changes here for the first time user experience, or FTUE, as Jagex calls it. They say previously the Berthorpe and Taverly path books were hidden from experienced players with at least 250 total level, but the achievements in these hidden paths could still be completed. Now these books are visible to all players, but Turiel's new player paths in Berthorpe are now marked as complete if the player is experienced or has turned off the guidance system hints. And you can actually toggle the guidance system hints inside of the game settings, which include contextual tutorial pop-ups inside settings, gameplay, general, and optional interfaces. And they say, so if you're leveling a new alt and aren't interested in the tutorial achievements, you can simply flag them as complete, so you won't be getting hounded along the way with that.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. It's cool. Kind of like, hey, I've been here before, don't bother me, right?
Yep.
So, they also eased up on the restrictions for experienced users with this. Guidance system hints are now automatically turned off if you choose I have played very recently after character creation. And that's one of the boxes that you can tick. And it's actually really neat because when you tick a different box, if you say that you last played RuneScape ages ago, it will give you a UI reminiscent of how the game looked before RS3 came out. If you say you've played very recently, it'll give you something that basically lets you determine the best way forward for yourself. And this is that option. Then there's a third option, which is that you've never played before, and they give you the most tutorializing with that and give you a fairly modern but very functional RuneScape 3 user interface that many of the old players might find uncomfortable, but I think it's actually pretty good. So that's just something from the new player experience that many people might not be aware of.
I guess I haven't created a character in a while.
Yeah.
Well.
Might have to take David's Iron Man challenge.
Oh.
But with archaeology and the next Yak Track, right? I mean, we got lots to do.
Yeah.
Upon reaching total level 100, the Berthorpe first-time user experience will be marked as complete. This was previously level 250. Turning off guidance systems hints will now clear the first-time user experience path if selected, and the description for the guidance system hints toggle has been changed to receive small tutorials and tips while playing, and if disabled, this will treat the Berthorpe tutorials having been completed, so you won't be hounded to once again go and do the tutorial in Berthorpe. Then they also change the way daily challenges work for newer players. And they say since basic challenges are now generated for new users, a player could, in theory, progress a challenge without first completing the daily challenge interface tutorial. And to fix this, progressing a daily challenge now counts as completing this daily challenge interface tutorial. And since basic challenges are now generated, the daily challenge path is now immediately available instead of being unlocked by talking to Farrah or completing the Berthorpe tutorial. So it, once again, you know, this goes back to that update we saw, I think it was earlier this year, that streamlined the way daily challenges works and, you know, made them become a way for new players to effectively get into them right away. And Tanis, I got to remind me about these later. I got something about what we were talking in pre-show that we're going to mention after on this.
Okay.
And actually, I'll just mention it right now and it would be to not leave the listeners out, but Star Trek Online actually has a very similar system to this where you get three sets of daily challenges that you can complete and you get items that help you up along the way from when you first started all the way to the end. So it's a nice little analog that exists in other games.
Yeah, cool.
They removed you are already in Berthorpe / Taverly area message, which appeared when tracking a basic daily challenge in this area. And that's it for the daily challenges section. Next, correct an issue where a blank slot could be left behind in the activity tracker when handing in a tracked daily challenge. All right. I didn't know that was an issue, but good that it's been fixed. And for mobile users, updated the checkbox style when selecting which skill to use a lamp on to be more consistent with other interfaces, as well as for the audio settings interface and for the rune metrics drop logs as well. Now, moving on to other changes this week. Did you know that vulnerability bombs, you can now throw them at the target, and even if that target is still under effect of the bomb, it will refresh that effects timer.
Cool.
That's with this week.
Yeah, I wonder how useful and where they're most useful at. I'll ask David.
Yeah, you know, the way I see it is if you're set up to do, you know, ranged or melee damage and you're not necessarily set up to do magic damage, your vulnerability might splash. So that's where I think using the bomb would make sense.
Okay.
Because it's a target debuff. Speaking of combat and PVM, Mithril's cleanse radius during the Solak encounter has been increased by one tile, so making it easier to cleanse the negative effects when you start. I believe it's the second wave. Now, it's no longer possible to complete the solo achievement Fist Contact in a group. We have redefined the term solo instance to indicate an instance where the maximum number of players is one, rather than an instance with only one player in it. Okay. I had no idea I had no idea this was a thing.
No, I didn't either.
And, you know, I have the same reaction to this as well. I mean, I guess what this means is that you need to have something that's specifically earmarked as a solo instance rather than just, you know, creating a group instance and being the only one in it. That's my sense on this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, why they could have said that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what this achievement is or if I've even got it, but it seems like a bit of an odd one with this. Oh.
It's probably hitting it without a weapon.
Yeah, it's a general Gyarados achievement for using only their fists.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense. Updated the Lumbridge path to stop referring to the Lumbridge Market Bank Chest as the Combat Academy Bank Chest. You can no longer reclaim the higher level members version of the Star Fury Cape on free to play. The Ninja Team spied a rogue set of 8 pixels on the C-to-side interface that were separating boxes further from each other than on other drop cleaner interfaces. So the C-to-side is now consistent with the other interfaces, and the ninjas turn these 8 pixels in at the Port Sarum Jail, where they are now waiting to be seen at the Sears Village Courthouse. You gotta admire the spunk that are in some of these.
That's definitely eye on detail, right?
Yeah, yeah.
8 pixels.
Yeah, and I actually noticed this last week when I was recording the video to use as B-roll in our episode in the bit this, and I didn't actually say anything at the time. But I did notice that. I don't know how many of the listeners did or general population did, but if you've ever laid out a user interface before, be it on the web or anywhere, you're going to notice things like this, and they annoy the crap out of you.
I see.
The cost for charging engrams will now correctly cap after prestiging three times. Of course, this is the Memorial of Guthix, so I'm guessing that the costs were getting even more expensive after prestiging three times, which you probably don't want.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good.
So, and that was a good piece of content, thinking about it, right?
I never finished it.
Oh, okay. Neither have
I. But yeah, I mean, it was.
I think I did, you know, like two prestiges or something. I think I did something like that in terms of my work on it.
See, I went through it. I just never went through it again. Yeah, like I never prestiged it.
Yeah. All right. And bug fixes this week. They fixed the issue that was causing the big game hunter detection zones to not display the correct color.
That's good.
Yeah. And, I mean, having the colored rings is a lot better than having a block of text above the dinosaur's head saying exactly how far it is away, so that's good. A rune metrics issue on mobile has been fixed that was preventing users from being able to toggle stack value on or off. Fixed a bug that allowed players to claim fully repaired lucky chaotic items from Diango's item retrieval, and the items will now be retrieved in their broken state. Fixed an item that prevented pieces of dyed malevolent armor from being used, from being equipped using the action bar. Sorry about that. And fixed an issue which allowed players to bypass the cooldown on adrenaline potions. Okay, then. Yeah, that's definitely an important one, isn't it?
Uh-oh. That sounds like it.
It sounds like a bug that people would have fun exploiting. Yeah. So, alrighty, folks, there's your patch notes for this week. And, you know, I think with all the global uncertainty that we're seeing with this RuneScape update a couple days later in the week is a sight for sore eyes for all of us. So I do appreciate the delivery of this update, even though it was a couple days later than normal. So big props to the Jagex team for getting their remote systems working and being able to ship this largely in a remote manner. So.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, can they do it to archaeology, Shane?
Yeah. That's the big one because, you know, archaeology scheduled to launch on the 30th, and there's a very good chance everybody will still be working at home from that time. Uh-huh. So. But speaking of that, we should probably talk a bit about it.
Let's talk about it.
Okay.
Let's talk about it.
All right. I don't know if we're bracing into something good or bad here.
No, it's not. I mean, I don't know. We got a lot to talk about with this stream.
Yeah, we do. So, it sounds like you have something you want to get off your chest.
Oh, no. I think when you get this close to a skill release, it gets frustrating because I'm to a point where I didn't really enjoy seeing like little bits, and I'm much rather just not even, you know what's coming at this point and just experience it on the 30th. I think the reaction to some of the things in it will be mixed. I think they're cool, but I think there will be a mixed reaction.
I think I know what you're talking about. It's the XP rates, right?
I'm going to break your heart, Shane, but I was actually talking about the mysteries.
Oh, okay.
I don't think anyone's going to want to do quests while they're skilling. Like, that's like, ugh.
Well, I got an entire clan of 400 plus people that think otherwise.
I know you do, but like, it's not something that's usually high up on like a skillers list kind of thing. Like, I like the lore drops. Like, those I think are perfect, but I don't know. Then again, when they say chunky XP, okay, like a lamp versus how long does it take to do them? is it going to be? You know what I mean? Like, so there's opportunity in it, there could be, or there could be, like, you know, just ignore. I don't know. It depends.
Yeah, and, you know, I think what's coming out of all this is that it's going to be a skill of choice in terms of, you know, are you constantly focusing on following the time sprites around? Or you may be buying soil off the Grand Exchange to speed it up in terms of being able to repair the various little artifacts and trinkets and other bits and bobs that you find while you're within the skill.
That depends on how long it takes to clean the soil, right?
Right, I mean, and we
and
don't
what
know
you
yet.
Actually end up getting out of it, because it might not be that great. Who knows? I mean, yeah. It might be wonderful. Who knows?
Yeah. And
I don't know.
But you know, the important thing is, though, like, go back to the release of Invention. You remember that huge buff they had to do for Invention?
Yeah, because, that was a nightmare.
Yeah. With longevity testing and so many people playing it in studio, that should not happen here.
It should.
It shouldn't. So In some ways, you know, being worried about that is something that I don't think is too much of an issue, so to speak. So
no, the only thing I mean, I don't know. I guess, do you think, like, they're representative of the player base? Like,
well, I mean, they have so many, they have so many people inside the studio that work and work there and play the game. That's a very good thing, because, you know, there are games out there where the devs and the people who are game designers don't actually play the thing.
That blows my mind. Like, that blows my mind.
Yeah. And, you know, this is exactly another Star Trek Online anecdote. For a long time, we had the guy who used to design the ships, one of the systems designers, didn't actually play the game that much. But they actually had someone come in who started off in QA and played the game for many, many years and graduated up to being a ship designer. And since she took over, the quality of starships coming out in that game has gone up drastically because she understands the game.
That's awesome. And I guess we're pretty lucky there are a lot of players now. A lot of, you know, people that played the game that have now joined the Jagex team.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
Going into the actual live stream this week, they did a bit of a tour of the Archaeology HQ, or the Archaeology Guild, as it was. And this is at the dig site that we all know and love. You know, this live stream was largely visual for the most part of it, so I'm not going to have too much to say on what they actually talked about. But they showed the Archaeology Journal, and it looks a lot like the Ark Journal, which, you know, seeing that kind of put a chill down my spine. But thankfully, everything else here is so much different that it's not going to be a huge problem.
Yeah, was it just me, or, like, I kind of found it a little bit frustrating because they could only tell you just a bit.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, like, enough to be
exciting.
I don't know. It wasn't like tease in a good way. It was frustrating.
It was like a bit of a tour of the user interface more than anything.
But they would start to tell you something, or they'd want to say something, and then they'd be like, oh, and you're like, okay. And then you're just like, okay, well, just let me see it now. Wait till next week.
And the question I have is, should we show the opening cutscene for Corinda Ett? Because they did show that on the live stream. Or should we leave that for
I wish I hadn't heard the voice acting.
Okay.
I would much rather had done that when on release.
All right. Well, we're gonna leave that then, because I don't want to spoil that for people, because that's a pretty big deal then. So we'll just leave that. Mysteries. We need to talk about the mysteries then, because these were set as narrative hooks that are embedded within the skill. Some are like mini quests, some are very straightforward, and there's some that are more involved. And they'll be part of the master questscape.
And you know what people really like to do Those men of Foss City Quest, they love it, don't they? People love it. They love doing those farmer jobs, too. They love them.
I didn't get the sense that these would be like city quests.
It's going to be... Well, no, it might be more like a actual mini quest.
Right, and the reason for that is because the amount of lore that's going to come out of this is something that has been allowed to, you know, effectively many people calling archaeology the lore skill.
Which is awesome. Like, I really like,
and that's why I think it's different.
Drops they're talking about. I don't think this, look, this will be received very awesomely by Clan Quest. You know what I mean? Like, by probably the majority of our listeners. You know, there's a group, but there's going to be a lot of other people, I think, that find this just a genuine pain in the ass. But we'll see. I don't know. Depends on how taxing it is and versus how rewarding it is.
Yeah, and you know, you realize what we're saying here. This is more let's wait and see rather than being able to say anything definitive on it at this point. And that was in
and
large
that's
part
why, like,
what the live stream was.
And I get – okay. I don't think you need this kind of a live stream for hype. Like, in fact, this I just find irritating, right? Like, there's other ways to create hype than this. And I don't know. Let that reaction be what it would be on release. Because now, like I said, some people are going to say, like, love it. They're going to love the idea, but and even though you don't know how, they're going to love the idea. But some people are going to hate the idea. Well, yeah. Why make that a week ahead of time?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, why give people a reason to prejudge it would be my thing. Not saying it's right to do that. I'm just saying.
And to be fair, I haven't looked at how the community was taking up this live stream.
I hadn't
so
either.
I had no
that was just, I mean, that was just kind of what my takeaway was. We'll see. Because, like, I think people want to experience lore the way they want to experience it, like, which is normally, like, you guys would read it, right?
Yeah.
And so that's why I think the drops are great.
Yeah, lore drops. They're just like what happens in Daemonheim.
Right, and I think – and all the other stuff with the skill, like, the artifacts are all going to – I mean, everything in the skill is going to be – have that kind of stuff with it. So this could either be like a really fun workaround way of training, or it could be like, it could be punishing. Who knows? But then again, if this is as well balanced as what Sirion says, then this is just going to be another choice, which would be great for the lore people and
Bingo.
Everyone else doesn't have to,
Bingo.
You know, do it.
Yeah. And that leads me to my next point. There was a question about, you know, what happens with items that you need to progress the skill. They said there's no way that you should not get all the items that you need by a specific level. But there is bad luck mitigation. Should you truly have bad luck that you don't get what you need by that level?
Oh, and I thought that was – okay. So that helps because I thought they were referring to the Master Quest Cape Rex.
No, because okay. There's some, so you know, there's some items that you need to, I'm guessing, move on within the skill. And if you don't get them, this is where that mitigation, bad luck mitigation will kick in.
Okay.
So, every site has a number of things that can be studied. And these are those special research areas that they mentioned. And these are little things that pop up on the ground and you can study them and you get a little, pop up and then, you know, you send off your little, I guess, player-owned archaeologists and that's the special research. So you have to discover them first to do it, which is nice rather than, you know, just being able to log in for 5 minutes a day and go boop, 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 just like you do with the player-owned farm, right?
Yeah.
So.
And the, you know, Land Altai, Anachronia.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. There's also, believe it or not, new materials that they're going to be using here. And one of the ones they showed was the new glass highlighting in game, which looks amazing. Did you see that part?
Glass highlighting?
Yeah, at 27 minutes in. Like the way the glass will shimmer.
No.
Yeah. There's new materials for glass in game. Looks absolutely amazing. Then they showed off the skill cape. It looks so clean and white with its black trim everywhere.
Which is funny because you get the cleanest looking cape for doing the dirtiest skill.
Digging through the ground.
Yeah, like, because if I'm digging in the ground, I'm definitely wearing a white cape, like a clean-looking cape.
And they added agility icons, little glowing bobs on the surface that showcase wherever the agility shortcuts are. They should be added to all agility shortcuts in the game, they say, but they're definitely on all the archaeology ones. Which is absolutely amazing to see this kind of thing on the ground to highlight what exactly an agility shortcut is. So
it's been a while since you had to worry about this.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't think about them anyway.
No. And I mean, I think this is a direct result of the feedback that came from Anachronia.
Oh, probably.
Because you remember how we said it's so hard to tell what's interactable and where you can and can't walk? Well, now, in addition to your cursor changing, there's a little glowing thing on the floor that shows where one of the shortcuts is that you can use.
Oh, that – I can't wait to get my hands on this and see, like, you know, if that's a lot more helpful for me navigating with the minimap like I do most of the time and stuff like that.
Yeah.
On the ground.
I wonder if these, you know, they said they added them to all areas in the game, and that would mean Anachronia as well on the agility course.
Oh, that is true. Well, I'm not getting my hopes up on that. We'll
have to wait and see on that. But,
yeah, we'll have to see.
You see what level of benefit such something that looks so small provides to us here. And this is the kind of thing that we love seeing.
So. And this is the kind of thing you want to see when something is pushed back for extra time. When it comes out and it has these kinds of features in it, it makes it all worth it.
Yeah.
And that's when, and I feel like it validates our position of
hold it till it's ready. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a little glowing silvery thing on the ground. So, I mean, you're even going to be able to see it. Because it stands out from the ground on its own.
That's awesome.
So that's good. Then there is an unexpected guest in the live stream. Mod Warden popped in to the door. He just, you know, just the executive producer walks in and joins the live stream, grabs a headset and sits down with everyone and starts talking.
How's it going, guys? What's up?
That's so great, isn't it? And
I'm a fan.
And he just started, you know, taking direct questions from the chat. And this wasn't necessarily as planned with this. And, you know, one of the biggest things people have been asking about is the roadmap. And he went straight into that. And he said his leadership style can be described as bringing certainty, making sure they hit their dates, the goals and scope of the projects, and most importantly, following up on promises.
Which is exactly what was needed. You know, I mean, when you look back, it's like that's exactly what they need.
And, I mean, you hit the ball out of the park with archaeology, and then you apply that to all the different skills, and then all the different updates for the year, then you wind up being on a roll. And
then
he's looking at
iOS beta.
Yep. He's looking at 2020 of being a way of delivering what people care about. And he specifically mentioned questing and desperate measures because there has been seen to be a gap in quests.
And that is something that, I mean, I think that quest it's definitely something people care about, because even if you're not hardcore quester, if you still do the quest, you invested in the story. So you want to know what the next chapter is.
Yeah. Yeah. Then he talked about tentpole content. He said archaeology is one of these, and this is, you know, one of those huge releases that governs the branding of RuneScape, and he'd like to release another one of these this year, as well as getting in a number of skilling beats, as he called them. So what we can translate that to is updates for skilling, which I think people are going to be absolutely happy about, and he wants to over-deliver on quality of life.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, and they are doing a good job on quality of life. Like, that is something we have been seeing week after week. So, that's awesome.
It really is. Then he said, it's not just about user experience, but smaller and medium-sized things as well. And with this, he wants to have a strategy with strong quarterly outputs, because that's how he operates. And we should expect a month-to-month roadmap with dates and timelines. And he said this is going to be hard for some people because this is drastically changing how things go. But I feel like this is something we've also said, is that let's just, you know, take a step back and let them do what they need to do and release content when it's ready, and we don't necessarily need to know what's coming all the time a month in advance, right?
No, exactly.
This is the way the rest of the games industry does it. And sure, Jagex is good with their weekly updates, and they were the first ones to really go out there and start communicating with people. But there were times when there was that month-to-month communication that started to hurt things. So I think this is definitely the right decision. Definitely the right decision. I don't have any concerns. Do you?
No, I don't.
Okay. Then it became, or rather, it didn't become something that was surreal. It was something that I didn't expect to hear that we would have a remote chance of getting this year. He started talking about the engine and tech side of the game. In particular, improving readability, because he said he has a hard time reading the font in game. He wants to address that. Bring in resolution scaling for the user interface. He's seen tech demos for this already. He believes he has the core experience team to do this, in addition to the standard updates that the rest of the team ships. He also wants to look and see what would be the best experience for someone who's on a 4K display versus 1440p or a mobile display. And what kind of control should we give to the user that gives the best out-of-box experience? And they're going to test some of this probably with some betas when they do eventually get around to this. That's excellent.
I was speechless.
Me too, because I have said for so long that, yes, it's good to have a customizable UI, but when you effectively give the user enough rope to hang themselves with, they will. They're going to set up a UI that's not efficient, and it's going to harm their experience, and it's going to make it so they don't like your game. Instead, what you need to do is you need to have a few very good presets for user interfaces and then make it very clear that it's an advanced option to move the interfaces around. And that's what I get from this. And, you know, there's different UIs that work for all the different sizes of screens that he mentioned. And
I took it as we would be able to make it bigger.
Yeah, UI scaling, exactly. He also wants to get TrueType fonts into the game, and that would mean font scaling would be doable as well.
Oh, okay. You scared me for a minute, Shane. I'm like, oh no, then I'm totally misunderstanding.
No. And, you know, that would be the biggest accessibility update ever, if I'm not mistaken, ever. Right?
Oh, yeah, ever. And, I mean, I know we don't want to hear it. Errol's getting older. Errol's getting older. So, you know, being able to adjust that font. I'm thankful. I mean, I'm really thankful that they got Mod 1. But at the same time, someone had to know this. Someone else had to have trouble seeing it too, right? Like, but for it to be this fast, holy cow! Like, I would have never saw that coming.
Well, when you think about it, once mobile is out the door, you can start diverting team members to focus on issues like the user interface scaling and fonts.
Yeah, but you know, it seems like archaeology, well, not archaeology, not knowing anyway, but at least when it comes to mobile, like those people have been gone or on that for so long, it's like, I don't even know what it would be like if they were working on something else. Like, they've just been gone, Shane. It's been in the ether.
Yeah, and see, the thing is that eventually all the updates that come out are going to be built in a way to mobile. So there will still need to be people who work for on the mobile engine and whatnot and make it work on iOS and Android, but that need will decrease over time as they get closer to launch. He also addressed Treasure Hunter. He said there's been a ton of experimentation on it. They got fantastic feedback, and they want to put more of these ideas in front of players. The Diamond Dozen had great sentiment behind it, and the results are good. And we can expect additional rounds of testing on some of the better ideas.
Okay.
I know you really didn't like Diamond Dozen that much, but I did.
I don't know. When we went through the being able, you could gear it to experience, so I guess that was good. I just say bite the bullet. Do it with like what we're talking about through oddments.
Yeah, and there was also another oddment sale this week. Medium stars were 75% off.
Yeah, that was nice. I didn't have any oddments, but yeah.
Cool. I spent my remaining on it, and there we go. I mean, I'm not even a player who engages in terms of buying keys and whatnot, but I just had around 6,000 oddments or so left over, and I just dumped it all on bonus XP because 75% off is a damn good deal.
Well, yeah.
The thing he came back and really hovered on and drilled down into. Before wrapping up, is that he wanted to make it clear that in the future, whenever they announce something, that date will be firm. And they would like to be able to ship things with archaeology without having to shift dates. Or, and here's a very key word, and we talked about this in 2017, without remanaging expectations. I just find it absolutely hilarious that the things 3 years ago that we were talking about as ways to increase player sentiment are finally being acted upon by the Mod Warden, which, he's the hero that the community didn't know that they needed.
Well, that sounds about right.
And I think lots of people out there still don't know that they need him.
No, I think maybe they're just indifferent, but really. Is he our Picard, Shane?
We'll have to wait and see on that and see how that goes.
Yeah, that's true.
The good thing he said about archaeology is that releasing it means that there's a year of lore built up with it, and they're going to use this for the narrative over the next year and to lead them into the 2021 anniversary, which, of course, is the 20th anniversary of RuneScape.
You know what that means, Shane?
What's that mean?
Archaeology is going to have tons of Easter eggs. Like, with future things, there's probably going to be stuff.
Yeah, they did mention that.
There's going to be all kinds of these tie-ins all over the place, dude. That's going to be cool.
So this is going to be... This means that this skill is effectively going to be the RuneScape players. It's like a love letter to the RuneScape players, because if you train through this skill, you'll see all these little lore nuggets, and it'll just confirm what you already thought to know and provide insight on stuff that's going to be happening going forward. I really love it when games do that.
Yeah, like, if you've been here, for a long time, or you know, if you're really into the story or this kind of stuff, like, this is going to be one of the biggest build-ups, nostalgic build-ups, like, because you're going to have the release of this, and it's all building to the 20th anniversary next year. I think it's going to be, like, you're going to have the time of your life, right?
I mean, yeah. The golden age of RuneScape.
And we got plenty of time, so...
Yeah.
Woo! The archaeology race is looking a lot different now than it did a month ago.
And you know, one of the things I mentioned is picking up a new skill set, and I didn't mean that literally as in RuneScape, but lo and behold, here we are.
Dude, forget the Thrilla in Manila. This is going to be the Zoomer versus the Boomer, the retiree against the kid out of school. no holds barred.
Just a note on this, in preparation for the release of Archaeology on the 30th, we are going to be doing a lore recap and providing a little bit of discussion about all the different lore journals that shipped, and we're going to have that in next week's podcast. So be ready for that one, and it's going to be a good resource to listen to in the weekend 48 hours before Archaeology arrives. So hold on tight for that one. We're actually producing it right now, and it's actually looking really good. All right. I don't think I have anything else from the live stream. Personally, I found the bit with Mod Warden more interesting than the archaeology tour.
Oh, way. Yeah. Way more. Yeah. But that's for the reason, you know, I said before. I just think when you get this close... I think we kind of know what we need to know.
Yeah. And,
you know, let us figure
out
the rest.
We know what the core game loop is, and that's enough. We know, you know, what it looks like. And next week, you know, for all intents and purposes, I think the next week's stream could just be an art showcase.
Yeah, because, you know, had we, say, you know, Mysteries would have been a big deal if you found out about that on day of release, right?
Yeah.
And it would have felt like an extra, something you didn't know about. Yeah. So it wouldn't have felt like this was something you needed to do. It would have been like, oh, holy crap. It's like when we got the Slayer Dungeon, right? Down in Minifalls. That was like something we didn't expect. It was just like, oh!
It's what everyone wanted.
Oh my god! I know, but I mean... Yeah.
I don't know. I think people... I think it's a good way of building hype and excitement for it. Because, you know, I know many people who have their mini quest and quest list entirely complete, and adding on to it will be welcome.
Well, I guess that's, I mean, I guess it would add hype in that regard. So, yeah, I guess.
Yeah. So.
In that way.
Alrighty. That's it for the live stream. So, we're going to move on to our listener questions. But before we do that, I'll just thank our Patreon supporters for this episode, and it goes without saying that movie night is happening on Monday, this coming Monday, which I believe is the 23rd, I think? Yeah, 23rd. It's happening, and all the info on how that'll work and what we'll be watching will be posted on our Patreon at patreon.com/rsbnb. But in particular this week, big thanks go out to 29 Let's Go, Brock H., Cameron, Cass, C., GB900, Christian S., Diana, Jade Gizmo, James W., Jason S., Joe M., John P., Kyle, Our Memories, Rastafa, Rippeth, Sam W., The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V., and Zez. Thank you all of you for your support. It truly means the world to us. And, you know, lots of interesting things coming up with archaeology. We're actually going to be doing our archaeology roundtable on the 28th of this month. So, you know, just like we did last month, is a bit of a fun little discussion on double XP weekend. This one's all going to be all about archaeology, and you guys can say how you were right back when we started off with Anachronia and we thought that would be the next skill, and lo and behold, here we are, just days from its release. So that's something as well. And of course, you'll also be getting an inside update at the end of the month, and another monthly bit at the start of the month as well. So all of this and more can be found at patreon.com/ RSBNB. And for as little dollar a month, you can join up. You gain early access to the show notes. You can join in our roundtable discussions and vote on that monthly bit topic, which we'll be putting up very soon, probably this weekend. And you, of course, help fund the cost for hosting and production of RSBNB Update. And for $3 a month, you can get a special VIP rank on our Discord, a special mention on the podcast at the start of the month, and access to high-quality stereo AAC versions of the show. And finally, if you want to give the ultimate gift, for $5 a month, you receive a shout-out each and every week on the podcast and gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to create the clip show at the end of the year. So it should be very fun to see what happens on movie night. I've never tried anything like this. I don't know how it's going to go. Presumably it should go well, but we'll have all the information posted on the Patreon at patreon.com/RSBNB. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Questions. So we got two of them this week. One's an audio question from Parnassius. So let's dive into that one first. We love audio questions.
G'day all, it's Pern here with a question for you guys regarding the Farming Guild and its reward structure. For me, as it stands, there isn't a lot of use for it as a high level. One thing I'd love to see is perhaps the ability for those who have completely upgraded the player-owned farm and have unlocked everything in the reward shop and have a high farming of at least 115, or in my preference would be as a reward for actually unlocking 120, the player can now collect resources from elder animals. As it stands, many of these items are used for the new potions. Wouldn't it be good to be able to, once a day, collect the yak milk from a couple of elder yaks in our farm? Or if you have a couple of elder royal dragons, you can get a couple of hides from it daily. I don't think it would be overpowered, as it is only once a day. And I mean, even if they made it so you could only get one resource per animal instead of two as the adolescent and adult versions do, it'd be something. Personally, I think this would add a lot of value to the farm for endgame players and give a real useful reward. Love to hear your thoughts and discussion on this. And as always, thanks for the great podcast. Happy scaping to you all.
You know, I still have mixed feelings about the farming reputation system. And, you know, I think with a level, like you said, 117 or 115 plus, somewhere along there, throwing in a reward like this where you can get resources from your elder animals would be great with this, whether it's once a day or once a week, depending on, you know, what the economics would say behind that. I think that would be a good thing to do. I mean, aside from that, there's no other reason to keep elder animals around after you've checked them for their produce and XP. This would be, of course, very useful, like you mentioned, for the yaks. Also, for things like spiders and chinchampas, if you want to make those potions up, because those potions are actually more useful than when they first arrived. And, of course, for the dinosaur produce as well, because they factor in so nicely to the herblore ecosystem. So I could get on board with that.
Well, that was my first question, is if that would apply to the ranch as well. Because I honestly think that's the only part that really would matter. Because all the stuff you get from the ranch, I mean,
the POF? Or the ranch?
Yeah, the ranch.
Okay.
Like, that stuff is worth something.
Yeah. But it's worth its weight in gold sometimes.
And I don't think it would be overpowered.
Especially if it was once a week.
Yeah, I mean, but see, once a week, I don't think it's much of a reward or anything. So, I don't know. I don't see any reason not to do it.
Yeah, you know, most of the stuff in the farming reputation was the extra spirit tree, limpwort roots are doubled, animals sell for more beans, shiny animals sell for more beans, the bloodwood tree. And then at the top you get the very good farmer title instead of the master farmer, which you can buy from the shop. But, you know, another thing I wanted to see in the reputation when it arrived, and it's kind of on the same vein of making it useful, is, you know, add a 5 to 10% disease reduction in the top two or three tiers of the farming reputation.
That would be
for crops
more useful. Yeah, that would be I mean, I would probably rather have that than anything else. But if they were to do like what Parnassius is suggesting, it would probably be the most useful thing on that list.
Yeah. And, you know, right now the bean boosts are the most useful on that list, I think.
I mean, but beans aren't what they used to be.
You can still make them work.
You can still make them work, but...
They're not what they used to be, but you can still make them work. I mean, come
on. They're not as good as they want.
It's still good. It's 400 versus... It's 1,000 versus 400. Still immense amounts of XP to be found.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. Farm for XP.
Yeah, I would like to see people doing that. That's true. But, you know, nonetheless, I think that would be a good change to make something in the vein of what Parnassius has suggested, or maybe on the disease front as well. And, you know, it doesn't even need to be a large amount. It doesn't need to be like 100 dragon hides or, you know, 100 dinosaur roars or beak snot. It could be half or 25% of it too, you know, of what you normally get.
Oh, what are you saying? Old people can't produce as much, Shane? Is that what you're saying? What's ages, Shane?
Well, in theory, that's the way it works. Because you don't want that to be the sole reason you raise a dinosaur. You want it to be the leveling and the resources that come from raising it. So, I mean, I don't know what the proper number would be. I don't think it's definitely one a day. Because, I mean, what can you do with one dinosaur roar a day, right? Or one milk a day. It should be.
I really don't think it makes that much of a difference in a macro scale. Okay. Anyway. Like, it could just be normal.
You think it should be the same as it is now? Like
with the. Well, I mean, maybe you could knock a little off and make it like you know, because they're older or they're elder or whatever. But I don't think market wise it would make any difference.
Because, you know, whatsoever. This is one of the great things about the Ranch Out of Time is that even today, the dinosaur products like the beak snot and the roars are still actually worth something, because that's the only way of getting them in game, and they're not saturated.
Yeah, I don't want them to become saturated. I don't think they could. I mean,
And you know, this is a very Timbo question, because we don't have the numbers on how many people are checking animals each day. And, you know, the analysis behind that would need to be done by someone like Timbo to say, is this feasible? And if so, what's a number that won't hurt the economy? Because, I mean, you saw what happened when everything dropped fire ruins back in the day.
Well, yeah, but that was, you know, death by 1,000 added mobs, right? You know,
right. So... Overall, it's a good idea. It just needs to, I think, have a sane number associated with it. But that's not an us question or Parnassius question. That would be a Jagex question if they ever decided to do something like that. And you could totally lock it behind, you know, 117 farming and maybe master or even senior master farmer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, thank you very much. Next one from Sunset Fish. Is there an update that you'd fix or an update that you would bring back? I'd like to see PvP Worlds make a comeback, and oh, fix the dang photo booth already, Jagex. An update that we'd like to see come back.
This is a really hard question. I was thinking about before, and it's a really hard question.
And
I have a non-serious answer, but
okay.
I'm trying to think of like a serious answer, and I just don't know.
Well, what's your non-serious answer?
I want my darn dark light back the way it was when it came out.
Oh.
What? Oh. Guy can dream, right?
I guess.
It was good for a minute.
Yeah, it was like a tier 90 short sword against demons.
Yeah. Like, so sad.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess that's probably what I'd bring back. It doesn't sound so bad now that I think about it.
All right. You know, for me, one thing that always was interesting to me in the way that it worked in terms of the minigame was mobilizing armies. Granted, it didn't work, but it was nice. Because it was kind of like a RuneScape RTS, and you'd always wonder what something like that would look like.
Yeah. It hasn't been gone all that long.
No, it hasn't. And one of the archaeology dig sites is actually taking its spot.
So. I wonder if we're going to dig up mobilizing armies artifacts.
Oh, that's pretty funny. That's pretty funny.
Can you think of anything that is like not here anymore, though? Like,
Romeo and Juliet?
That's not here anymore?
No.
That's really weird. Why'd they take out a quest?
Because it wasn't, you know, like RuneScape canon, right?
Okay.
It was replaced by Gunner's Ground, but it's a similar storyline, but entirely different. Oh. And this was a quest back in the day that awarded 5 quest points.
I didn't realize it. I mean, I remember doing it. I didn't realize it was which
one. Yeah, it's gone. And you know, I forget what the other quest was that they removed. That they removed the kind of real world influences on them because they wanted it to, you know, just fit within the RuneScape kind of sphere of lore, so to speak.
I mean, I guess there's a million references to.
Yeah.
Come on now, the Gower quest.
Right, but that was designed to break the fourth wall as an anniversary kind of thing.
I know, but, I mean, come on. We're in about Romeo and Juliet, and we're back here mingling with... I mean, come on.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, because of that, I just think that they want to have stuff that is, you know, RuneScape canon, and you know, I guess the Gowers are important enough for that to be the case, and I mean, they damn well should be. They made the thing.
Yeah, I mean, yes, yeah, that was actually one of my favorites.
You know, I got a picture of them with me at RuneFest.
Really?
Yeah, all three of them.
Oh wow, that's cool.
Yeah. But other updates that are gone are Rat Catchers. The cat minigame.
Don't miss that.
No, that was really painful. And you know, I really can't think of much else that is
gone. I mean, I guess Bounty Hunter's been here and gone and here and gone. But I don't miss it.
And you know, PvP worlds are in that same vein as Sunset Fish suggested. So you know, it was interesting because back ages ago, and I mean truly mean ages ago, and we're talking 2001 here, RuneScape was a PvP game, and the only safe areas were banks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I played Darkscape. I know.
No. That's what that was based on. But proper RuneScape was actually based on PvP, believe it or not.
Yeah, I'm glad that didn't stick.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I you know, honestly, for PvP to come back, I think first you would have to deal the in-game question, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Because I feel like the only way to make PvP good would to be to make it like how other games do it. And it's just so different in RuneScape. Way that it's done, and I don't know. It feels very punishing in this game versus others.
Yeah,
yeah, kind of takes the fun out of it.
Yeah, and you know, this game has a reputation on PvP of being very deadly, let's just say, because if you lose your items, it's all gone.
Yeah.
And that's not how PvP is done in other games.
No.
So, you know, there needs to be a discussion, is that should there be a place in game for non-dangerous PvP that can be used to revitalize that as a gameplay mechanic and just have the wilderness effectively be classic PvP? And, you know, a long time ago, and this is probably 2015 or something to that effect, I outlined what I called a three-plank strategy for PvP. And one of them was bringing in safe PvP. Another one of them was doing it in the Clan Citadel, as effectively having it away so that you can set up scrimmages or matches based on, you know, your own custom settings between two groups of people. You know, say have a 20 versus 20 kind of thing. Everybody signs up and have different...
I thought the Battlefield did that.
Yeah, it can, but it's not effectively marketed as PvP, right? Like, it's not like a PvP experience. It can be, but it's not marketed as that.
That's true. Yeah.
And the third was actually with PvP Worlds as an option, too.
And that makes sense. A lot of other games do that.
Yeah.
You know, they'll have, you know, just PvP servers. So.
Yeah, so it was effectively that three-point strategy of PvP Worlds, safe PvP, and the Clan Battlefield.
And we've seen examples, because I will always go back to that world event, too. I still think that was the best world event. I think people had the most fun with it, and it was at safe PvP all throughout.
Yeah.
Well, not all throughout, but, you know, like, through a pretty good portion of RuneScape, and it was... I mean, that was fun.
Yeah, and I mean, the best part about it is you could take part in it and you didn't have to PvP if you didn't want to, but you could still be useful to the people who were PvPing.
Yeah, no, that was a perk.
No, you know, I'm actually going to change mine on here and say safe PvP.
There you go.
And go with something like PvP Worlds and, you know, just make PvP come back somehow. Because, you know, we need to address that end game question. Is end game going to be something based on achievements, which I don't know if that's a good idea? Is it going to be bossing, or is it going to be PvP?
Yep.
At this point. So, thank you, Sunset Fish. Good question. Good question. If anybody wants to send your own questions in, you can do that. Just email them to questions@rsbnb.com, or you can leave us a DM on Twitter @RSBNB, or just, you know, tag us on Twitter and we'll take that as part of the question for the coming episode of the podcast. All right, let's move on to tech news right now, and we do have some interesting tech news to discuss, because this week we got news from both Microsoft and Sony. Just so happens that, you know, the same week they both decided to release the specs for their next generation consoles.
Coincidence.
The Xbox Series X and PlayStation 5. So, the Xbox Series X will have a graphics processor that is on par with the NVIDIA GTX 2080, only to be outdone on the desktop by the 2080 Ti. It's a system on a chip design done by AMD, capable of 12 teraflops at 1.8 gigahertz, and its CPU is going to be an 8-core CPU running at 3.8 gigahertz, which it's blazingly fast. And just for a bit of comparison here, the original Xbox operates at 1 teraflop. The Xbox One X is 6. This is 2 times as fast as the current top-of-the-line Xbox that's out there. It's also going to come with internal SSD storage so that games are going to load a lot faster, and they're even bringing out a new quick load functionality so you'll be able to resume games instantly based off of that. It's going to aim to offer 4K, 60 FPS going up to 120. And, you know, it'll probably come out at a price point at $499 US.
What?
What? Yeah.
What? Dude.
I know. That's half the price of one of those NVIDIA GPUs.
Not to mention, though, I mean, I hate to say it, but that's on par with a real decent gaming PC. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's on par with what we're rocking here.
Yeah. And, I mean, if you really wanted top of the line in terms of...
$500?
If you want... This is cheaper than a gaming PC because it's going to be able to do 4K 60fps. And if you want to do that at this point in the game on your PC, you're going to need to spend at least $1,200 on it.
At least? And that was, I didn't even care about that. And no, dude. That's nuts. $500 is nuts. Get them while they're hot.
Yeah, and it might even be cheaper. Might even be cheaper because they're not selling it with a Kinect this time. They sold the first Xbox One without a Kinect for $399.
Yeah, but is the Kinect really like that expensive of a piece of software? I mean, come on.
Not really, no. They also have some screenshots showing ray tracing in Minecraft. Changes the way completely of how the game looks. And you want to know the best selling point?
Okay.
100% backwards compatible with Xbox One and Xbox 360. Wow. So if you have Xbox One controllers, if you have Xbox One games, Xbox 360 games, all of that will work with the Series X. And if you bought a game for the Xbox One, you'll get that game for the Series X with any updates that it needs to make it 4K capable. So the idea is that you buy a game once and you're going to get the best game to play on the Series X or the One.
And they outdone themselves there.
Yeah.
Nice machine.
That backwards compatibility, the 4K 60fps performance, that is going to blow away every gaming PC out there under $600 guaranteed, because you got to factor in a good 4K monitor for your PC is going to cost you, you know, $300-$400 at least. Then you're looking at, I don't know what the prices are in the US, but here you're looking at least $1,100 for the 2080 GPU, plus maybe another $300 to $400 for the CPU. So what are we at? We're at what, $1,600? Then another $200-ish for the motherboard, $1,800. So you're looking at least a third of a price, potentially. We don't know what the price is going to be on that. You're looking at a third of the price to be able to do 4K, 60fps, potentially 120fps gaming on this thing.
Yeah. I wonder if it'll get VR. I mean, it's obviously capable.
I don't know if that's – I think that's something Microsoft has stayed away from, really. Let me just look through this here.
It's got all the muscle, though.
Yeah, it definitely does. Nothing mentioned about VR here. So let's move on to the PlayStation 5 and see how that compares, because as per usual, these two like to compete, and they unveiled their – specifications on this. They're running a similar CPU, 8-core, 3.5 gigahertz, 10 teraflops. It's going to have 825 gigabytes of SSD storage, expandable SSD storage, just like the Xbox Series X has as well. They claim it will be faster than the Series X, just based on the way the throughput works. But overall, you're looking at two very comparable machines here with the PlayStation 5 and Series X. And, you know, it's going to depend where you typically park your gaming experience. I've been Xbox for a long time, and I don't intend to change with this. But the PlayStation people should be equally excited about the PlayStation 5 as well. And
I'd always been a PlayStation, but I didn't get a 4. Because man. Didn't need one. You know, yeah. I had a PC by that point. But I think I would – I mean, are they offering the same kind of backwards compatibility?
They say it well. They say it well. But it doesn't – I mean, it doesn't go as far back to the point of being able to play, you know, Xbox 360 games on it, right?
See, and you know what? That, we were told that with the PS3, and a few of them did it. And then they quashed that real
There's
quick.
There's a lot on the Microsoft side that have it.
Yeah, so if I were to go back to a console at this point, I would probably try
an Game Pass.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. With the Game Pass, I really think I'd probably go Microsoft this time around.
And, you know, there's also the thing that if you wind up getting Game Pass, you can also use that for your PC as well.
Yes.
So, I don't know. I really like the Xbox offerings, but like I said, if you're a PlayStation person, you should be equally excited about the PS5. All right. Next piece of tech news, we have a date for the first launch from American soil to the International Space Station since 2011. It was July 8th, 2011, that was the last space shuttle mission. And SpaceX will be carrying two NASA astronauts up to the International Space Station. There, and they're targeting a mid to late May launch on this.
Hmm. You think the usually two come back, right? Like two go up, yeah. And then you think those guys are like drawing straws or something? Be like, no, I'm cool, guys. I'm cool. Can I do another couple months up here? We good?
Yeah, this will be the first time that the SpaceX Dragon capsule is taking people up. First time it'll be crewed. And, you know, this is something that everybody always holds their breath for, because there have been tremendous accidents in the past that have caused great losses of life with the space program.
And yeah, accidents happen when you're sitting on top of 20,000 pounds of fucking however much it is.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, just a bit of background for anybody wondering on this. Ever since 2011, 9 years ago, the U.S. and other countries had to rely on Russia to send their crews and supplies up to the space station. Recently, SpaceX started to do supply missions unmanned, and those have been successful. But if you want to send people up, you got to go through Russia, and they're using their old Soyuz capsules from, you know, Cold War era.
You know, I actually saw, like, the replacement craft that was supposed to bring our astronauts back after the shuttle.
Right.
When I was down in NASA.
Yeah. And,
dude, it was sharp.
Yeah.
Like, it was sharp. I wish it had, you know.
Yeah, what happened with that is that was a project that was started under the Bush administration, but the Obama administration retooled NASA to focus more on climate and Earth-related stuff, that project got the can.
So I think we got to get GTFO.
So they shifted towards focusing on the private sector. And, you know, this is the private sector's response to this 9 years after the fact. Lo and behold, it's time.
We need a warp drive.
Yeah, that'd be nice. That would be really nice. So this is something we'll definitely be watching and have coverage of when it happens in May. Unless there's any negative side effects, because that can definitely happen with space-related things. All right. We like our iOS, don't we, here on the podcast, you and I?
For sure.
Well, Apple launched a new iPad Pro this week. And with this, they also launched a new Magic Keyboard for the iPad Pro. And it's not only a keyboard, it actually suspends the iPad in such a way that it puts it in a position that's very reminiscent of what a laptop looks like. And on this keyboard, there's actually a trackpad. So, what exactly is this? Well, The iPad now has proper support in the most recent version of iOS for trackpad and mice, which is something Apple had long resisted. And they put out a video on how exactly this works. What effectively happens with this is that the cursor doesn't appear until you need it. So if you start moving your mouse, you'll get a little round blob that's reminiscent of your finger, because they still want it to be a touch-first experience. So when you move your trackpad or your mouse around, you'll get a little round blob, and you can click on all the various buttons and icons that you would expect. But if you move down to a toolbar, for example, it shifts to being a contextual focus of that icon, making the icon bigger and providing a bit of a background shading behind it. It also shows that, you know, this is if you're needing to type or select text, this is actually a really good way to do it, which anybody who's tried typing on an iPad before will know that selecting text on the iPad is hard, or on iOS in general. And lots of people want to use it for writing, and they weren't able to until it got trackpad and mouse support as well. So this is a big admission from Apple here.
Yeah, I'm surprised it didn't get, like, keyboard capability.
Oh, it can use a Bluetooth keyboard. It definitely
can.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's been able to use a Bluetooth keyboard for years, since the very beginning.
So then this is, like, this is their Surface.
Yeah, that's exactly what this is. So if you wanted to, you could, you know, take any Bluetooth trackpad now, connect it up to the iPad and use it. Take any Bluetooth keyboard, connect it up and use it, and dock your iPad in a position that's comfortable for you. And you've kind of got a bit of a laptop replacement. I'm still not completely sold that the apps are desktop caliber yet. And, you know, I looked into this a bit in the past, and it would be actually still very hard to, you know, for instance, produce a podcast on the iPad. But I mean, if you were wanting a machine that could write and take school notes, this would be a good option as well for
here
this.
But RF mobile.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Right? Like,
yeah.
You could totally be in the otter position.
And that'll be
a mouse.
And that'll be another question, is that, you know, how do app developers work with this? And is it going to be seamless to take an iPad? Or even, you know, at this point, because it's wide-ranging for iOS, there's actually mouse and keyboard support in iOS 13, believe it or not. Sure. Right now, you can connect a Bluetooth mouse to your iPad or iPhone right now and use it. And that'd actually be something interesting to try when it comes out, because, I mean, could you imagine what that would do for RS playing if you could actually use a mouse on your iPad?
That'd be awesome.
So, just a little bit of news from the Apple world here, that Apple is diving in with both feet here.
Both feet there, Shane.
To support trackpads and mice on the most recent versions of iOS. There we have it. All right. I think we can move on to our other things this week. Sound good?
Sounds good.
All right. We have a few achievements this week. So starting off, we have Eric's with 99 crafting on the 18th, Black Nexican with 99 mining also on the 18th, Kazanda with 99 divination, Rastafi with another 200 mil, that's an Iron Man, 200 mil smithing on the 18th, and Sigma Gamma with 99 magic on the 18th, and finally Kazanda again with 99 fishing on the 17th.
Very nice. Then we have One Rib with 99 prayer on March 15th. We have Lord Dusty with 120 thieving on March 15th. Ollie the Dim with 200 mil strength. Someone really didn't like to get rid of Ollie, so an Ollie we trust. And then One Rib again with 99 defense on March 13th. Then we have Mythica UK with 99 crafting on March 13th.
Nicely done, everyone. Nicely done. Excellent achievements. I'm wondering if we'll see the number of achievements go up as people Stay inside.
Probably.
All right. Well, it's pick of the week time. And I have a game. This is a little bit of a hilarious game here on this front. And you need to work with your friends to make this, to have a good experience here. The game's called Heave Ho. And you get, you know, four people together. And you can do it split screen too if you even wanted to. And the whole idea behind this is that you are four people, and each person has a head and two arms, and that's all you are. And you got to get to the end of the level. It's a platformer, but there's a little added challenge along the way. You need to pick up things along the way sometimes. So someone needs to make sure they're holding on to whatever you're aiming to get. And it's different each time. Sometimes you don't need to pick one up. Sometimes you do. And whoever holds on to, you know, for instance, the ball, as an example, gives up one of their hands to hold on to that. So that person has to effectively sit at the end of the human chain. And because of that, coordinating with your team makes all the difference here. And it is just utterly hilarious because, you know, you can grab people by their head and imagine, you know, you're in a chain. You make a human chain, right? But rather than grabbing onto someone's hands, you grab onto their arm. So I can grab onto your arm and you can grab onto my arm at the same time, right? But if both of us let go, we're going to fall to disaster. So you got to coordinate with people who's letting go where and when. And, you know, it's just a fun little group experience that you can, you know, spend a half hour, an hour or two on, just as a kind of a way to decompress or blow some time away with that. So it's just a fun little game. You can get it on Steam. It's called Heave Ho. And it's actually one of the games that supports Steam's remote streaming. So with that being said, really only one person in the group needs to purchase it because the other person just joins in through this Steam stream and you're able to play the game even if you don't own it. And, you know, it's through an indie developer, so it's pretty cheap, $9.99 US. Very low in terms of the performance requirements involved around it. But it's just a fun way to have some fun with your friends and, you know, laugh and blame people for messing things up. So that's called Heave Ho. You can find it on Steam.
Cool. Sounds like it can be a team building exercise.
It really is. It really is. Because if you do the wrong thing, then you're not going to have success. But at the same time, if you coordinate yourselves very well, you're going to have a much better time than you would have. So that's Heave Ho. Apparently there's a PvP mode. I don't know what exactly that would have associated with it, but you can get the idea if you just look at the Steam page what it's all about. So that's Heave Ho. Link is in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com.
Awesome.
Yeah, remote play together is the technology I was looking at, by the way, for Steam. That allows only one person to have it.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
All right. What have you been up to on RS?
Very little, to be honest, but I am finishing off my harmonic dust and doing dev for charges. Kind of in a holding pattern right
now. Yeah, it seems like that's what everyone's doing, eh?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Anything else?
No, it's really been about it.
Okay. As for me this week, I also finished my harmonic dust exercise, got the 4,000 harmonic dust needed to make the Madoc for when archaeology arrives. I was initially going for 5,000 because in the RuneFest talk, they said you're going to want about 9,000 for all of these things, but it was actually the crystal flask that requires 5,000, not the Madoc. Yeah. I mean, we all know how people felt about the crystal flask when that arrived. But yeah, I've been doing divination charge gathering as well. It's just a thing to do while we're waiting for archaeology, and that's why every time I look and see when is Yak Track coming. And now we finally have a date. It's just so much better to know that it's finally on the way. So I'm very, very happy about that. So, but that's it. We'll, of course, be back next week, talk about the new Yak Track and the archaeology lore roundup as well. So I don't think there's much else left to talk about on this week's episode. So with that being said, if you guys want to subscribe to the podcast, you can do that. Grab it on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, YouTube, practically anything under the sun. Just visit update.rsmb.com/subscribe. And of course, you can also join our friends chat, which is Bits, Bytes, and Game, and our Discord as well, which is rsbnb.com/discord. So we'll see you guys next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone.
See ya.